And our next speaker is Dr. Ken Fleming, who's the head of medical research at Oxford University. And he's going to discuss the university's perspective, why the new lab is being built, and what its achievements are likely to be.
I should just maybe correct our chair. I'm not actually representing the university here. I'm actually here as the head of what's called the Medical Science Division in Oxford. That's the overall academic grouping, which includes the likes of Andrew's work that he's discussed earlier on. So I'm not actually formally here as the university representative. What I wanted to do is maybe just take the 5-10 minutes I've got to say a little bit about why we in Oxford particularly need the new laboratory, the new facility, and comment on one or two other things about the implications of this building going ahead or not. First of all, I'd like to say why. You may not know, but in fact, we are living now in one of the golden ages of medicine. People will look back in 50 years' time and say, this was one of the key times in human development where big changes, big advances were made in medicine and how we can prevent disease, how we can diagnose, and how we can treat disease. And that's coming out of particularly what's called the Human Genome Project, understanding the basic DNA. But what we have to do with that DNA map, we have to try and take the information which is coded in that map and apply it into the clinical arena. And you need to do that in a variety of ways, and you can do it by tissue culture and so on. But as Andrew's alluded earlier on, there are many aspects of this which you cannot do other than by using animal research at present. And this is simply an absolute requirement. But if we are going to deliver the potential of the Human Genome Project and do it in a reasonable time scale, we need animal experimentation at present. So why? Because to deliver the golden age, we need to do this. Could we use other things? Of course we could. And I have to tell you, no scientist I know particularly wants to work with animals. It's complicated. It's very regulated. As you know, this is the most tightly regulated environment in the world. It's very expensive because of that. It's extremely complex. And of course, on occasions, the results you get from animal work don't necessarily translate into human. Having said all of that, there is no adequate substitute in many arenas at present, and we simply have to go on with this. Many scientists, as you know, are involved in the 3R projects, reduction, replacement and refinement. But to date, as Andrew's alluded earlier on, we can't do without it. What types of animals do we use in the new facility? The great, great majority, in fact, will be mice or rats, zebrafish, and the likes of the primate research, which Andrew alluded to earlier on. Very little of that, probably less than 5% of all of the work will be involved primates. So the great majority is small mammals such as mice. Why does Oxford particularly? Well, there's a tremendous tradition of medical advances in Oxford. I was asked earlier on, the three very obvious ones, penicillin we all know about. Penicillin wasn't discovered in Oxford, but the appropriate uses of it were, it was first used in the Radcliffe Infirmary in 1942-43. That came out of animal experimentation. Couldn't have been done at that time without it. I was just thinking earlier on, there's a particular type of cancer gene, so-called tumour suppressor genes. They were discovered in Oxford about 35 years ago, and they were discovered using animal work. There are many other examples which I could quote, but Oxford has a very strong tradition. We have one of the strongest biomedical research endeavours in the world. The scientists we have here are absolutely committed to being at the forefront of all research developments, primarily, of course, for the benefit of patients and for the population. That can only be done, and we can only allow them to do that and facilitate them if we have an animal facility which allows them to do that. So the university is very committed to delivering this building. And maybe just finish with a couple of other points about academic freedom. One of the reasons the university and myself and others are absolutely committed to this is that there is an issue of academic freedom here. While it's perfectly legitimate for people to disagree and could disagree as vociferously as they wish. And as long as they do it legally, there's no reason why that can't be. But the fact is, if the majority of the population and if the government and the legal system says that this is entirely appropriate, it's entirely legal, then it'd be wrong for the university not to proceed with this and to, as it were, cave in to the voice of a vociferous and aggressive minority. Now, I know the great majority of people who don't accept animal experimentation don't approve of violent behaviour. But unfortunately, there is some. There are extremists. And it's very important for the university to stand up and say, as a matter of principle, this is important and we're going to make sure this happens. And then very lastly, I was asked to say about getting people to speak openly. Now, it is interesting, and I think our chair mentioned earlier on that the extraordinary difference that Laurie Pycroft has made. I've not met him. I haven't even met him tonight. But I do think we do all owe him an enormous debt. I've been asked once or twice, am I embarrassed that it took a 16-year-old to do this? Of course I am, actually. Somebody also said earlier on it could only have been a 16-year-old who didn't know what the heck he was doing. And I think there may be an element of truth in that. But it is true that, in fact, has taken somebody to stand up and say, look, there's something seriously wrong here. And it has been, I think, in the current jargon, something of a tipping point. The fact that we're having this meeting here tonight, I think, illustrates that. And I think perhaps the university, perhaps people like me in positions of responsibility in the university should have been more vocal in the past. I can only say I, like many others, made a judgment, rightly or wrongly, that in fact it was probably safer, which is not particularly honourable, but it's a fact. And people were also concerned that if they actually gave the oxygen of publicity, perhaps this would again be counterproductive. People are genuinely scared. Rightly or wrongly, whether that's sensible or not, people are genuinely scared. And it has taken an event like, as I say, Laurie, to come on and make a difference. I think I, like others here in this room tonight, hope that this tipping point has now been passed. And the likes of this meeting and others going forward will allow the silent majority or the loud majority now to have its voice heard. Thanks very much.